We do have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order, and I have a few announcements to do. The rest of the week, and first of all, tomorrow we are having just public testimony on the bill. We have the delete all being printed right now. You've all received it, I think, through email. And it's being printed as we speak, and it's also online. If you have amendments, they're going to be due to the committee administrator by 3 p.m. tomorrow. That's Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we will hear amendments and finish the bill. And hopefully, it's got to go to Ways and Means. If we can get it done, it can't go to Ways and Means unless we go through, we have to have it in session first for transfer.
Mr. Chair, just for my, the process being what it is, that the public who's interested in this bill is going to be paying attention today and tomorrow and Thursday. And even though I asked Chair Carlson about the bills actually being in front of us, I would not raise an objection if the bill wasn't in front of us at Ways and Means, if we're going to just kind of blink it out and not really discuss it much. If there is an amendment that an unofficial engrossment such as this delete all, I wouldn't object about that if it meant not having to come back Monday night.
Well, we will have a delete all amendment.
Right.
Or it's an amendment. We will have the bill, and then but it will be redrafted as an amendment to the big...
Right, yeah. I mean, that's my point. So, I mean, it's just a technical thing, and if it makes people lose another night of their life just because if we can't get to it, if there's too much discussion on the rest of the bills, then it's fine. We want to have adequate discussion. But if that's the only snag, I don't have an objection, just for my point.
So I would, we called the meeting to order, and would somebody like to move the minutes? We don't have any minutes, so I can cross that one out. So I would move House File 2150, and as I said, there is a delete all amendment, which I would also move, and to House File 2150, and Doug will go through the spreadsheet, and then his staff will walk through the bill. So I think I would, first of all, move the delete everything amendment to 2150.
Mr. Chair?
And just a...
Well, I know you'd like this to stick it on, but it would be nice just to for know what's in there, and then you can, if you just want to delay a vote for a bit.
Okay,
can
well, then I will do that. So House File 2150, the original bill has been... moved. We won't do the delete all.
So you can move the amendment that we just discussed. The amendment.
Yes.
Just
okay.
As a
then I would move the delete everything amendment. And Mr. Berg, if you would run through the fiscal.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members should have a legal size document that is labeled at the top 2014 HHS fiscal tracking. It's a 5-page document. This represents the finances in Article 7 of the Delete Everything Amendment. I'll move pretty quickly through the first page. If you look at the top on line 10 under the 14-15 year column for the House bill, orient members, the right-hand six columns are the House bill. The left-hand columns are the governor's recommendations. If you look under the House bill under 14 and 15 and you look at line 10, you'll see the amendment spent $75 million in general fund appropriations in 14 and 15. That is exactly this committee's target for, under the budget resolution. And if you move three columns to the right, you'll see this bill has tails of $578.2.3 million. In comparison to the governor spent $82.2 million in 14-15 and $182 million in the tails. I'll come to the sizable difference in the tails target in a couple pages. Well, actually, I will get to it in just a second. If you move down to line 26, which is the TANF fund balance line, you'll see that at the end of 2017, the governor's shows a negative balance of $644 million. The House bill represents a negative balance at this point of $239 million. We'll come to an item shortly that adds a base appropriation rider to the appropriations for medical assistance from the Healthcare Access Fund, which straight line those appropriations at the fiscal year 15 level, which has the effect of moving $403 million of costs from the Healthcare Access Fund to the general fund for medical assistance in the out biennium, and I'll come to that item momentarily. The rest, just note the TANF balance on line 31. This bill has one item in it that spends some TANF money. If you look at the governor's column under 2017, you'll see that there was a TANF reserve balance at the end of the out biennium of $9 million. In the House amendment, the TANF reserve balance goes down to $3.7 million, so we've spent approximately two-thirds of the TANF reserve balance over 3 years. The rest of page one is just summaries by agency, so I'll move to page two of the spreadsheet. The first item on line 101 is the same for the governor and for the House. It is the 4% increase for home and community-based service providers. Moving down to line 114, this is Representative Fritz's bill, House File 2885, which provides the impact of a minimum wage increase for nursing homes. It assumes there'll be a minimum wage increase to $9.50 an hour and compensates the nursing homes for their mostly overnight staff who their wages will be affected by that. Line 120 is Representative Den's bill from last night, House File 1992. And I will note that you see that there is $150,000 plugged one time in there. There is a pending fiscal note, which is not done. My understanding is the advocates communicated that they think there will be a low cost for this bill. The chairman has indicated back that he'll keep this in there to keep the discussion alive, but if the fiscal note comes in at a substantially different cost, this item would have to be revisited. Line 125 is the same for the governor and the House. This is the HCBS quality add-on correction that makes various technical corrections to the quality add-on piece. Line 132 is the same for the governor and the House. It is the implementation, technical implementation issues around community first services. It has a net zero fiscal cost. Line 137 is Representative Loeffler's bill 2797 that we heard last night that deals with spousal maintenance in the asset calculations or in MA eligibility. Line 143 is a portion of Representative Morgan's bill, House File 2841, that deals with university-affiliated hospitals. Again, those are children-like children's hospitals. There's $800,000 there, which pays for a part of what his bill would cost. It deals with the historic claims from when the rate reduction happened until August 31st of 2013, but does not deal with any claims outside of that period. Line 146 is the base adjustment that I mentioned. I'll just comment that there was not a base rider adopted in last year's bill for ME spending out of the Healthcare Access Fund. That's a normal thing for forecasted programs. We don't normally have base riders for forecasted programs, and that's the way it was treated. Subsequently, there's been discussion, and Minnesota Management and Budget has been a little uncomfortable that since there is both spending out of the Healthcare Access Fund and out of the general fund for MA, that this ought to have a base rider indicating what we think the Healthcare Access Fund will pay in the future, because the general fund side is forecasted. So they are advocating adopting a base rider. The base rider that was suggested in the governor's bill put it at the levels that the spreadsheet showed last year, which show that leads you to the $690 million shortfall at the end of fiscal 17. What the House bill will do is it will take that same base rider and it will set the appropriation level from the Healthcare Access Fund at the same level as it is projected to be in 2015, which is about $200 million a year less than the spreadsheet showed last year. Again, that has the effect of moving an estimated $403.6 million of medical assistance costs in fiscal 16 and 17 from the Healthcare Access Fund to the general fund. So, all right. And moving on to page 3 is the same for the House and the Senate as the Jensen settlement money. This is to comply with the judge's orders in the Mito settlement, the Jensen settlement, which is what the Mito lawsuit, and this is part of the state moving into its Olmstead plan. Lines 164, again, you heard about last night, this is a technical fix to the North Star program that it has a savings of $3,000 in the current biennium. Line 168 is Representative Allen's MFIP Educational Opportunities Bill, which allows more education to count in MFIP. Of the $691,000 cost in 2015, if you look down, you'll see $122,000 is general fund. The rest of it in 15 and in the tails is from the TANF fund. And that's, again, where we spend about two-thirds of the TANF reserve over 3 years. Line 176 is Representative Halverson's bill, House File 2203, for the Homeless Youth Act. Line 180 is Representative Allen's bill, 2248. This is the DHS part of the Safe Harbor bill, which is for housing supports for sexually exploited youth. There is a piece I'll come to at the Health Department as well for this bill. Line 184 is Representative Liebling's bill, House File 2379, for recovery school programs. Line 188 is Representative Faust's bill for senior nutrition programs. Line 192 is the healthcare payment modernization line. This is just on there to indicate that there is an item that DHS is working on that has no cost. This largely involves the issue of hospital rebasing, but there is not at this point a fiscal cost on any spreadsheet for that. Line 195 is the governor's item for the CARE chemical dependency programs deficiency. The governor allocated $4 million a year of administrative funds in the chemical dependency chemical dependency treatment fund administrative funds, plus he added $1 million a year in general fund for $5 million a year in expenditures. The House's language does the amount from the administrative account, which is not general fund money, but does not add any general fund money to it. So the House has $4 million a year, whereas the governor has $5 million. Moving on to page 4, line 209, this is the same. This is the governor's item for the Andrew residents that confirms the rate in law that they have been getting. Line 213 is the same. This is the governor's item to have us join a national registry to coordinate benefits so that we can make sure that we're getting reimbursed for any services that have third-party health care coverage. Has a slight savings. And then the next three items the governor has are not done in the House's bill. The supplemental salary items for state-operated services, the security hospital, the sex offender program, and the study to review sex offenders are not covered in the House bill. Moving on to the Health Department, the first item is a series of technical things. The only difference between the House and the governor on this is that the House pays for the legal settlement costs out of general fund money, not out of health care access fund money. Line 414 is Representative Fabian's bill from last night, 2314, that has a hospital construction moratorium exception for a mental health facility in Thief River Falls. Line 419 is the governor's item, and is the same in the House for a single licensure system, integrated licensure system, to make sure that licensees only have to get one license rather than two. Line 424 is Representative Loeffler's bill, House File 3030, that provides money for planning and conducting an immigrant and refugee mental health conference for mental health professionals. And moving on to page 5, line 428 is Representative Huntley's bill, 3212, which we have 75 plugged in for his healthcare workforce study commission. It's possible if this moves forward that this would move out of the health department and maybe go to a different place. Line 432 is Representative Loeffler's bill, House File 1733, that provides money for the Minnesota Poison Information Center and the regional poison information centers. Line 436 is Representative Moran's bill, 1738, for minority community dementia outreach pilots. The unnumbered line, it would be line 440, is Representative Clark's bill for healthy homes for $100,000 a year that deals with environmental hazards in homes. Line 444 is the other piece of Representative Allen's bill, 2248. This is Safe Harbor, and at Department of Health, this is money for the regional grants to develop plans to help prevent sexual exploitation. Again, the DHS part is for housing of exploited youth. Line 448 is the same as the governor's. This is the spoken language interpreter piece at the health department. Again, this is just to improve the existing registry. This does not involve the licensure idea that was very controversial in another committee. Line 452 is the appropriation for food, beverage, and lodging inspections. This is, again, now that Ramsey County used to be in charge of inspecting facilities in St. Paul. Now the health department does it. They are charging people as per law for the services, but they don't have the authority to spend the money they collect to do it. So we're just giving them the authority to spend the money. And it's, again, not general fund. And then on line 456, there are a series of technical corrections at the health department, none of which are in the, there's one in the general fund, which is moving 25,000 from 14 to 15. The reason for that is that last year's Safe Harbor bill appropriated 25,000 in each year to do an evaluation of the program, and the rider said that the evaluation was in 2015. So it doesn't spend more money. We're simply making the appropriation and the rider match each other here. The others deal with non-general fund items where there's a duplicate appropriation, and another case where the health department is collecting some fees but does not currently have authority to spend the collections. And then at the bottom of the page is a new item, which is Representative Huntley can mention more. I believe there was some contact from the governor's office that the Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities simply doesn't have enough of a budget to operate their office, and this item simply appropriates $100,000 a year in general operating funds for the Ombudsman for Mental Health DD. Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there. The rest of Article 7 has language in appropriations riders and various technical corrections to implement the stuff I just went over. And then Article 8 of the bill is the forecast article, which simply makes changes to last year's appropriations to implement the forecast changes that have occurred since then. It's not controversial, and I wasn't going to go through those in any detail. I can answer questions for members, but.
Okay, are there questions? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that presentation, Mr. Berg. So if I'm understanding this correctly, then we're taking $403 million out of the healthcare access fund to reduce the tails in the.
The other way.
The other way around.
Oh, into the healthcare. Okay, had it backwards. So, is that money going to continue to be generated there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunhagen, to clarify, we're not actually moving money. We're moving the cost of the MA program, which currently that $403 million is. Something that the healthcare access fund would pay in fiscal 16 and 17, but with this change, the general fund will have that burden. It doesn't affect revenue to the healthcare access fund or the general fund in any way.
Well, Mr. Just one follow-up. So why did the governor? It looks like his proposal didn't touch it at all.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, that's correct. The governor's proposal simply has a legal change that clearly implements the situation that is currently on the fund balance statement. He didn't do anything to change that in any way.
And that's why his tails are Mr. Chair, that's why his tails are higher, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, that's why the governor shows a much greater deficit in the healthcare access fund, but lower spending in the general fund in the tails.
Yeah.
We're transferring again $403 million of the cost burden in 16-17 for the MA program from the healthcare access fund to the general fund.
Okay.
Just remember that is to pay for the medical assistance. We're not going to be paying for medical assistance out of the healthcare access fund as
we originally did before.
And although I will say that there was a, I don't know if it was a mistake, but we didn't have the right rider in there, and we should have had a rider that left some amount of money in the healthcare access fund, but it, for some reason, didn't get any bill.
Mr. Chairman, to clarify, when we passed our bill last year, we did not put an appropriations rider in the tails for the Healthcare Access Fund appropriation for MA. That's because we don't use appropriations riders for forecasted programs. We don't need them because they're forecasted. Now, in this situation, in hindsight, the staff and MMB thought about it and said, well, it's different. What we did last year that's different is we started appropriating directly to medical assistance out of the healthcare access fund, which had not happened before. And the thinking was, well, this is not clearly in law also forecasted. The general fund side is, but it's not clear that the other side is. So we should have put a base rider in there. But to the other part of yours, when we left session last year, there was no projected deficit in the healthcare access year in any year, even with the expenditure assumptions we made last year. The healthcare access fund was solvent all the way through 17. Since then, there have been a couple of things that have occurred. One is that because our reimbursement to the Healthcare Access Fund from the federal government on Minnesota Care enrollees is based on the cost of insurance in the healthcare exchange, the insurance in the exchange came in considerably cheaper than we imagined it would. That's a good thing for consumers. It's a bad thing for the state when we're getting reimbursed from the federal government based on what those cost, and they cost a lot less. And there are some small enrollment changes, but I guess that's not really a part of it. It's mainly due to the issue of now that we know more about federal funding and the VHP, we are going to get less. I will make a separate comment on the $290 million remaining deficit in the healthcare access fund. Excuse me, $239 million remaining deficit in 16 and 17. The federal government just issued final rules for payment to states under the BHP, the Basic Health Plan. Those are still being interpreted, what they mean. It's a pretty complicated statement. I will tell you, I've read it several times, and I don't understand it. And other people I have talked to have read it and don't understand it. But it is the general belief that it means we'll get a little bit more money from the federal government for the BHP than we were projecting a month ago when before that came out.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a quick, Ronald. You know, if you don't understand it, the rest of us are in real trouble, okay?
That's why we have Mr. Burke.
No, sorry. People up in the audience.
Hey, thank you for that explanation.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was very interested in that as well with Representative Grunhagen talking about the Healthcare Access Fund and the management of it, and I'm just wondering, was there any, there's a policy change for managing this fund moving forward from MMB, and I'm wondering if there's nobody from MMB here, if we can talk about if there's any communications about a policy change with moving forward with how to manage the Healthcare Access Fund with federal dollars, and when that policy change was affected or shared with us.
We have a little section in this bill that relates to the Healthcare Access Fund and its balance in the future. As far as you'd have to ask our staff, research people. Yeah, I don't think MMB is here right now. Don't be getting up. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Pete Bernardi from Minnesota Management and Budget. Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, the governor's budget does not have any proposals specifically on the topic of managing the healthcare access fund deficit. I think Mr. Berg did a good job of laying out the dynamic that we found ourselves in since the last session ended, and there were positive balances forecast. And then information from the feds have rolled out in addition to the lower premiums that have played out on the exchange. But there are not any explicit proposals from the governor or Minnesota Management and Budget on the Healthcare Access Fund at this time.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bernardi, I have you on my list of people to call to ask for a half hour of your time to help me help explain this to me, so I hope you'll agree to that in public so that I can get on your schedule. One of the things that Mr. Berg is trying to describe this to us in ways that we can understand, and in the way that Mr. Berg described it was that we had the Healthcare Access Fund with a balance in it. That money was used to pay for the MA expenses for the biennium, and we are now looking at shifting to move back to sort of repay that bucket over time. Is that a accurate? Did I understand Mr. Berg correctly in my way of trying to understand that?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative, to my understanding, I think that's a fair characterization, at least as it pertains to the House bill that's before you now. In the regard that this House bill would shift the paying for medical assistance from a portion of it from the Healthcare Access Fund to the general fund.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Bernard, thank you for that. And I think that recognition is important for moving forward for how the budget was balanced and how we're moving, looking for a long-term policy to pay back that shift. I think it's good to recognize that and put it on the record for moving ahead. And once again, I apologize for not understanding exactly the interplay between those two funds, but I think I'm kind of on the right track, and I hope you won't mind if I get on your calendar in the next week or so. Thank you, Mr. Bernardi, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean, if you can understand that in just a half an hour, as you suggested, you're a lot smarter than I am.
Oh, he just looks very bright. I think he can understand.
Representative Abler.
Oh. Okay, well, I've got a lot of questions, but we'll just talk about this one for a bit here. So, Mr. Berg said that, don't leave wherever you went. Mr. Bernardi, if you can just come back and hang around for... Yeah, thanks. Because this is the part of the budget that nobody really understands. It's the Healthcare Access Fund isn't in the forecast. It's just offline, and you have to ask for a special piece of paper even to get the update on this, and it's nice as part of our general spreadsheet, so that gets some notoriety here. But so, Mr. Bernardi, at the end of session last time when we did the budget for 14-15, did you say that there was no projected deficit in the Healthcare Access Fund based upon the projections you had at that time? And so what was the balance in 16-17 for the Healthcare Access Fund at the end of session last year?
Mr. Bernardi.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I am not finding my fund balance at the immediate moment, but
just the rough numbers.
At the end of session, there was a positive balance for both the 14-15 and 16-17.
All right. It was a pocket change. Was it a 100 million or 50 million, or was it like a lot?
It was. I think not much more than 50 million. If it was right. 50 million in any given year.
Mr. Chair, I've just said
Mr.
that.
Mr. Berg, do you know the?
Not a lot.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I don't have the fund balance with me, but I have last year's spreadsheet that has an ongoing calculation. So just so you know, this number would be probably a little different than what appeared in the fund balance, but it should be in the neighborhood. The 14-15 surplus was 13.8 almost million. And at the end of 17, it was 79 million on the spreadsheet. Again, the next fund balance would have come out in November of that year, several months later, by which time I think we already had the insurance rates at that point, and the effects would have started to work into the.
Thanks. Mr. Brown.
I would just confirm that that's right with respect to November, that between the end of session and the November forecast, we did know what the benchmark premiums were from the exchange, and so the November forecast did reflect deficits in the tails of $177 million in 16 and $362 million in 17.
All right. Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, and so on the conference committee, I kept asking what choices are we making and what's this going to cost, and it turns out we're off. All this Healthcare Access Fund projection was off by a factor of two. I think we spent about $600 million, the process spent $600 million or so to buy all this MA business that we were buying, something like that, wasn't it? And then here we come with a deficit, with a swing in the fund balance of over $700 million, the 647 that's cumulative, and then the minus, the 79, so that's over $700 million. That's a pretty major swing, and none of this is free. You can't do all the things you want to do and have it cost nothing, and I'm a little disappointed that here we are with this huge number, and we're just going to throw it into the tails in the general fund and not do anything to address what got us here. While we don't do a 5% COLA, and while we don't pay attention to other things that we really very much wanted to do, and I hope members understand that the decision that was made forward to go with the expansion, which is supposed to be free money covering all these people, is not at all free. And in fact, it's going to cost the general fund $1 billion sooner or later. It's costing in this bill $405 million in the tail. And with it leaving a deficit of $239 million in the healthcare access fund. And so it's not free. And it's going to affect a lot of choices people get to make about stuff they want to do for housing, for the sexual trafficking people, and psychiatric care, and all the rest of the things that we want to do. And I just point that out so people don't think this is not a casual thing, and I'm sure it just really very much wears on the chair as he has to face this challenge. So that's, I'll just leave it at that on this topic. Okay. That's more questions, but I'll yield to the rest.
Well, I would like to have staff research people walk through the bill or describe the language.
Okay.
Who's going to start? Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members, we're going to start with Article 1, which relates to the Health Department. Section 1 of Article 1 is from House File 2314, which was from Representative Fabian. It relates to the hospital moratorium exception. This bill would allow, as written, for a 25-bed psychiatric hospital in Thief River Falls.
By the way, that will be changed. It's going to be, is that yesterday?
Yeah.
It's going to be a 16-bed.
Sections 2 and Section 9 are from Senate File 1272 from Representative Clark, and these are grants to nonprofit organizations for the training and education to communities on healthy housing. The recipients under this bill will be required to submit a quarterly progress report to the commissioner. And grantees can conduct the activities that are listed on page 5, line 25, through page 6, line 12. And these activities include the implementation and maintenance of primary prevention programs to reduce housing-based health threats by providing education materials, promoting awareness, and promoting use of hazard reduction measures, provide training, provide technical assistance, promote adoption of evidence-based practices, or develop work practices for addressing specific housing-based health threats. Section 9 of Article 1 also comes from this bill, and it limits the Health Department to hiring no more than one full-time person for administration of the grants. Sections 3 and Section 5 of Article 1 are from the Governor's Budget Bill. These sections allow a home care provider applicant or license holder to apply for a home and community-based services designation. Without this, they would otherwise have to apply for an additional license under Chapter 245D. Section 4 of Article 1 is from House File 2248 from Representative Allen relating to the Safe Harbor Program. This language expands the duties of the Director of Child Sex Trafficking Prevention to include managing the request for proposals for grants for comprehensive services, including trauma-informed, culturally specific services. Section 6 of the bill is from House File 1733 from Representative Loeffler. This bill requires the commissioner to review the duties of poison information centers, make funding recommendations, and determine the financial and public health benefits provided by the poison control system to the state. Section 7 is from House File 3222 for Representative Huntley. This bill creates the Legislative Healthcare Workforce Commission that does require legislative membership. And it requires the commission to study and provide recommendations on how to strengthen the healthcare workforce. The commission will expire on January 1st, 2015, and a report is due to the legislature by December 31st of 2014. Under the bill, the report must identify current and anticipated healthcare workforce shortages, evaluate the effectiveness of incentives currently available to develop and retain a highly skilled workforce, study alternative incentives, and identify current causes and potential solutions to barriers related to the primary care workforce. Section 8 of the bill is from Representative Moran's 1738. And this bill creates a competitively awarded pilot grant program for nonprofit organizations with expertise in providing outreach, education, and training on dementia-related conditions. The grant recipients will provide education and promote awareness of dementia to the general public and specific minority populations.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 2 is the healthcare article, and the bulk of this article is comprised of the governor's proposals related to setting up a new hospital payment system based on the APR DRGs. Section 1 of the article is the governor's proposal. This would allow the commission to contract with a national organization to match recipient third-party liability information. Sections 2 through 20, 22, and 24, it would be language to implement the new hospital APR DRG system, the use of the ICD-10 codes, and to also rebase hospital rates as part of these changes. And as the DHS staff mentioned last night, I believe they're working with the industry and other parties on a number of amendments to these sections to make additional clarifications and to fill in some of the details. And I'll just go over a few of these sections. I won't go over all of them since, you know, many of them are very technical in nature. Section 6, this is the language that would direct the commissioner to use the new APR DRG system to determine relative values. Section 7 basically strikes language that currently prohibits hospital rates from being rebased, since rates would need to be rebased to implement the new system. Section 9 deals with budget neutrality, and it just basically states that when the commissioner rebases payment rates beginning in September of 2014, they use a budget neutrality factor to ensure that the new system, you know, basically doesn't spend more than the old system. Then moving to Section 15 of the bill, this is language that basically states that for the first 180 days, the APR DRG system is what's used to determine payment rates, and then following for stays of longer than 180 days, then the rate is based on the statewide average cost to charge ratio. And as I mentioned, the rest of the sections that I haven't mentioned are part of the governor's proposal for the new hospital system. I'll mention now a few other provisions, the other provisions in this article that aren't tied to the governor's hospital proposal. The first would be Section 12 of the bill. This would exempt a university-affiliated children's hospital from the 10% MA payment rate reduction. This is a revised version of House File 2480, Representative Morgan's bill. Then if you turn to the next page of the summary, Section 21, this requires the Commissioners of Health and Human Services to establish a healthcare homes advisory committee. This language is from Representative Huntley's House File 2760. And then finally, Section 23 of the article, this is Representative Loeffler's House File 2797 that would increase the MA personal needs allowance to incorporate payments for spousal maintenance.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I noticed that the change in verbiage on page 1524 to try and remove the specific naming of one vendor hasn't been completed yet. I assume that that will be cleaned up with a later amendment. And then And section 21, page 28.6, it talks about the 25% of the committee must be composed of patients and or consumers. And I am wondering why there isn't a reference in this section that a third of the committee be comprised of people outside the 11 county metro area, because there are some differences in the other regions of the state that it might be useful to have that input. And is that a type of amendment that the chair would find reasonable to discuss when we generate amendments?
I'm not opposed to that right now, but the problem is if we start doing that, then everybody's going to say start coming in with amendments to add specific individuals. But I would accommodate some language that does have some geographic balance put in there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was all.
And I will say, just to keep you folks informed, that this hospital rebasing is a huge controversial issue. And we are probably going to have to vote on this prior to the time that we will know how each individual hospital is going to be affected. And which is a very big political problem. we're hoping is, and I know the department is working very closely with the Hospital Association to come out with something that the Hospital Association can support. And so that I just want to make clear to everybody this is a big political problem for us. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To make it even more clear, could you just elaborate on the chair's opinion why it is going to be a huge controversial political issue on the rebase in the hospital?
Well, first of all, they're working on some amendments to try to narrow so nobody gets a cut bigger than a certain percentage and nobody gets a raise above a certain percentage, so they can narrow the differences down, but we don't have that yet. So, but I they've been working on this for years, and they still haven't been able to figure out how to do it. So, it's a problem. Yep. Representative Kernhagen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. So, if they've been working on this for years and they still don't know, then if we pass it, how are they going to know? I mean, if they don't know after years, then we pass the bill, how are they going to know by the time they're supposed to know? I don't know.
We'll have to bring them in and have them
explain that. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for giving us the heads up on that also.
Okay. Let's go on to Article 3, which is also has a very controversial part in it.
Mr. Chair, Article 3 is the North Star Care for Children article. This language comes directly from the governor's bill that was explained last night. The sections in the governor's bill related to policy only have been pulled out and are not included in this bill because they're included in Representative Allen's House File 3027. The provisions left in this bill are related to the transfer of permanent legal custody to relative caregivers, primary sections, and they deal mainly with background study issues and requirements for relative custodians to receive funding for caring for their relative children. There are some concerns that were expressed in Civil Law Committee this morning about some of these provisions and the requirements placed on the relatives. The sections not related to relative caregivers are sections 8 and 16 regarding Background studies for prospective adoptive parents, sections 9 and 10 regarding adoption assistance agreements. Sections 11 to 13 deal with the state share of costs for implementation of North Star Care. And that is the bulk of this article.
Okay, any questions? Okay, who's up next?
Mr. Chair and members, Article 4 is the Community First Services and Supports article. And this language all comes out of the governor's bill. It was described by Assistant Commissioner Coleman last night. It basically provides for some program integrity and other kind of cleanup changes to the Community First Services and Supports program.
Questions? Okay, Article 5.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 5 is the continuing care article, and sections 1 to 43 of Article 5 relate to the Jensen Settlement Agreement, which was described by Assistant Commissioner Coleman last night. This all comes out of the governor's bill, and it's all related to transitioning to more positive supports for people rather than using aversive and deprivation procedures. And then section 44 of Article 5 comes out of the governor's bill, and this adds a cross-reference in a DTNH statute related to vendor participation and reimbursement provisions, and it just adds a cross-reference to the home and community-based services standards. Section 45 of Article 5 is part of House File 3087 Representative Faust's bill that appropriated money to the Minnesota Board on Aging for senior nutrition, and this just requires the state funds to be distributed in a manner that's consistent with federal requirements. Sections 46 and 47 come out of the governor's bill, and this makes some changes to the home and community-based quality profiles and the performance incentive program. Sections 48 and 49 come out of House File 2885, Representative Fritz's bill that gives a rate adjustment to nursing homes for compensation-related costs. Section 50 comes out of the governor's bill, and this requires providers, home and community-based providers, to meet background study requirements prior to revalidation of licensure. Section 51 comes out of House File 1992, Representative Dean's bill that we heard last night related to home and community-based settings for people with disabilities. Sections 52 and 53 come out of the governor's bill. This provides a 4% rate increase to the ICFDDs and other home and community-based providers. Section 54 is a revisor's instruction, changing some terminology. This came out of the governor's bill. And section 55 is a repealer that's all related to the Jensen Settlement Agreement.
Mr. Chair, Article 6 is the miscellaneous article. Section 1 of the article would classify Minnesota Care as a forecast fit program for fiscal years 2018 and thereafter. So this would require the Commissioner of MMB to reduce transfers from the Health Care Access Fund to the General Fund, or to transfer funds from the General Fund to the Health Care Access Fund if this is necessary to meet annual Minnesota Care expenditures.
Mr. Chair, Section 2 relates to the CARE program that Ms. Berry discussed last night, the chemical dependency program that currently has a deficit. It would allow the commissioner to seek federal authority to develop a payment methodology specific to this program.
Mr. Chair, Section 3 comes out of the governor's bill. This is the section that allows for the rate, the GRA rates that are paid to Andrew residents to continue at the current level that they're at. Sections 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 all came out of Representative Allen's MFIT bill that provides for some additional educational opportunities to be counted as work activities under the MFIT program.
Mr. Chair, Section 9 is from Representative Liebling's House File 2379. It's language regarding the recovery school programs, requiring the Commissioner of Human Services to develop a grant program so that funds can be provided to qualifying recovery schools to pay for licensed chemical dependency counselors. And Section 10 is from Representative Lane's House File 2320 that requires the commissioner working with other agencies to develop an online training program regarding the Civil Commitment Act as it relates to individuals with mental illness. And that completes the bill.
Any questions? Representative Abler.
Yeah, to the bill now. I talked about some of the choices that happen casually, and I won't bring up this again here, but now about this massive shift. I didn't realize it was $700 million. But just to tell the audience, as they're trying to do future work on this bill, we have just actually created a massive tail, which is going to come out of whatever surplus, and I will have to do some math and see how what 16 and 17 is set for what the surplus may be yet going forward. We adjusted the tax numbers down to rescue some of the Minnesota workers and from businesses leaving and did all that, but now we've added to the cost level. And so just to point that out. So Mr. Chair, but other things about the bill. I have some questions and just some concerns. I'm glad that there was money to do the minimum wage for nursing homes, but just remember that the home community-based people are at the same disadvantage, and I think that's a $15 million problem. We didn't even know the actual number. On the AMPLATS thing, I think that leverage is $3.1 million total, so I'm glad you found that money. And I'm sorry you had to pay for that again, Mr. Chair. I already paid for that once, and even harder times, and so we paid $3 million for that in times when there wasn't $3 million to spend. So I'm happy that there's some work there. That's a good compromise, and I hope at least that can go forward. I would have wished we could have done some more reform in the basic health plan and the new Minnesota Care thing to try to find a way to actually get at the spending that the bill pays for, the $405 million and other costs that we just absorb, to actually get after it. Because this member should know that the basic health plan is a better than platinum plan. With very low copays, very low premiums, and it's better than platinum, and we've decided that bronze and silver are good enough for the rest of our people. And I just want to point that out as you go forward, and it's not even an effect for a lot of people. If we could have done that this year, nobody would have felt the impact. Next year, if you have to go after it, people are going to say, oh, my premiums went way up, and it's just harder. So that's all there. And I do have a question for you, Mr. Chair. If we don't, maybe somebody can answer the question, and I've been talking about the size of the target and the 4%, and I'm happy for one choice you made about going to the 4. I realize you had to rob everything else to do that, but some things that got underspent on, which this body is going to say we don't care about them, is the salary supplements and the MSOP supplement for Security Hospital and MSOP, and then the expert review. And maybe somebody can tell me if, I know the testimony was that we don't pay for that, they have to lay off staff. Is that right, Mr. Chair?
That would be correct.
Okay. Does someone know how many staff that would be? Does the department here, they know what, have they done their projection to see what that might be?
We can find that by tomorrow.
All right, thanks. And maybe the testimony could include that. I just want to raise the concern. And Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to, I know exactly what that chair feels like. And I know you had made some decisions. And in 2011, I used essential, important, and nice as the benchmark I used. And it's really hard to sit there and say, no, we're not going to do something. But there's some other things you just have to do. And it's a lonely place to sit. I'm glad that you used, I see the decision made about general fund instead of healthcare access fund for the Department of Health project. And I think that was probably the prudent choice and trying to get back to the proper use of the healthcare access fund, that $750,000. And then one other thing, and maybe the department can do this one if they're going to testify, but this, my last question for this debate here. On this interpreter thing, I don't know if the Department of Health is here, but we had a, shall we say, robust hearing on the interpreter matter, and I'm glad they've taken the licensure thing out. But there was a need for additional process, and I don't know if there's an amendment coming about additional process. They have money in their special revenue fund account, and if there was $50,000 or more put out, they could actually do a very good interim review time with all these 5,000 interpreters and come back with a plan that the rank and file actually agree to. And so maybe I'll work on that, Mr. Chair. But I just, have you heard any story about that there's an add-on coming?
No.
Okay. But to the Department of Health, I think this is something that's really important, and I think we all agree that you want to make sure these interpreters are credentialed and adequate. But you also don't want to turn out people who have been trying to make a living at this that are just trying to get their own little business going and make it into something. So, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Norton, did you have a question?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure where we're at in the process. Do you want to walk through the whole bills before you?
If we just have questions of the staff, then you can do that. But I don't think we're going to. I don't intend to just have the bill debated today. It's okay, just for our information.
I'll just hold
up. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and with the tight time frames, I really have to say our staff and state agency staff and everybody have been scrambling. But it's also kept some of us a little still confused because this bill is, or some portions of this bill are up in the policy committee this afternoon that we heard last night, and some things look like they might be policy only, not finance, but will they stay in this bill? I'm just trying to figure out the path forward for things that seem to be kind of going separate and in here as well. Is this kind of going to be our base going forward?
If we can find things in here that are just policy, then we could probably put those in the policy bill. You can find those. Let me know. I don't know if we have a deadline problem on the others in the policy side.
We'll just sort it out. I'm just thinking, I was talking to Danielle Pignelli here about, where should I amend something that's kind of a small amendment, but do I do it here? Do I do it in the policy committee? Maybe we'll do it both, but our staff will keep us coordinated.
Any other questions? Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, I know you mentioned it earlier, and so did Mr. Berg, and so did Mr. Representative Abler. I'm sorry, that's all right. The question is for you, so I'll...
Okay, go ahead.
Can you just clarify the medical assistance, the healthcare access fund? And I know Jim mentioned, or excuse me, Representative Abler mentioned, but it has a negative of 403, the spending. Yeah, Representative, I know we did this, okay? I appreciate that. But I'd like to be a little clear on this.
What's your question?
So the question is, can you just explain why that fund, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, is negative, and where is that money going?
When we expanded medical assistance, some of the people that were on Minnesota Care then moved into MA. And what we did is transfer money from the healthcare access fund to try to follow those people. Whether we did the right amount is very questionable because it was never the intent of the healthcare access fund to fund medical assistance. I think we shouldn't have transferred that money, but that's what we did last year, and I think it was a mistake. But we're trying to correct that problem and not run a deficit in the healthcare access fund because we still have the basic health plan to fund, and that's why we are having a deficit. Is we're funding the basic health plan out of the healthcare access fund. That is what the healthcare access fund was originally intended for.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for clearing that up. Yes, I recognize and I know that's why that fund was created and by the legislature in 1992 for those who are low income who needed the health insurance. And I certainly hope that this bill, as we continue to dive into it, that restores that fund. And I completely agree with you. It was a mistake, and I'm very pleased to see that you're trying to at least rectify that mistake and make sure that those funds follow the people that desperately need it and why it was established here by those who were here before us and some that were here
and
then.
And again, when we passed that bill last year, the fiscal estimate was that there was going to not be a deficit in the health care access fund. And then, because the state did such a good job of convincing the insurance companies to give us low premiums,
there we go,
which are the lowest in the country for the exchange, that meant then that we were going to get less money from the feds for the basic health plan. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment. You know, in this committee, there's a lot to learn. And I understand that, and after 3 years, I'm still learning. Even Representative Abler, after how many years? 16 years is learning, and under your advice, your tutelage, and your leadership, I've learned from you too, Representative Huntley. So it's okay to ask questions, and certainly if something's explained, to for me to ask another question to have it even further explained. So for another member to say to me that we've covered that I should be still, is not it's not nice. And it's not acceptable.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe for you or maybe for fiscal staff, in your explanation, you talked about how the goal is to try to rectify the decision from last year of shifting dollars and trying to get the health care access fund back into a position of strength, I imagine, to pay for what it's intended to pay for. And so is there any way of knowing, obviously this spreadsheet just goes out to 16-17, it's a pretty bleak picture for the healthcare access fund in 16 and 17. Is there a concept or a formula that tells us that it kind of has to hit bottom before and rectify this problem before it starts to get back to a position of strength? Because it's not a real promising situation on the spreadsheet, and I'm just wondering if there's a theory over time of if we're trying to rectify a problem here, for the foreseeable future, it doesn't look great. But are the decisions being made setting us up for a stronger position beyond the spreadsheet that we don't see here? Is there historical evidence of that, or how do we know we're heading in a better direction, I guess, is my question.
There is a section in the bill that relates to the health care access fund and what happens if it goes into deficit. And basically, it says the general fund would have to make up the difference.
Mr. Chair, I'll look because I did note that section. I'm trying to remember if it specifies, and if staff can say, does it say when that kicks in? Is it a number amount that the deficit has to hit in the healthcare access fund, or a date and time, or at what point does the general fund have to kick in to start backloading the deficit in the healthcare access fund?
Can staff answer that? This was an amendment that came up last night. Mm-hmm. So we were probably at 2 o'clock in the morning, and we were all home sleeping.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mack, if you look at Article 6, Section 1 on page 136, you'll see that it for year fiscal year 2018 and thereafter, it makes Minnesota Care a forecasted program if needed. On sort of the earlier part of your comment about the future of the Healthcare Access Fund, as you know, we look at our planning horizon is the current biennium and the one following it, so you don't typically see beyond that. There was a report issued because last year our bill directed MMB and Revenue to do a report on the long-term health of the Healthcare Access Fund, which is just meant to highlight, to take into account the main funding source for the Healthcare Access Fund was repealed 2 years ago. And in fiscal, at the end of calendar 19, yeah, the provider tax goes away. So the major funding source for the Healthcare Access Fund is gone after calendar 19.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the clarification. And I guess just for members, you know, if we put all those pieces together, that 2018 it goes to a forecasted program plus the funding source going out in 2019, probably something we want to start to take a serious look at, because it's not looking like a pretty situation come time 2019-2020 for this program. So I don't have the answers right now, Mr. Chair, but just wanted to try to put those pieces together.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I've been here, I think, long enough that the discussion of Healthcare Access Fund is exciting. And is there a therapy available in the bill that would help me get over that? Anyway, Mr. Chair, maybe if staff could get us...
where we have a big section on chemical dependence.
yeah, thanks. And I'm not going to redo what everybody said, but I think this forecasted piece in the bill is a very significant point. And I'm glad we called attention to that. This is not a minor section on Article 6, Section 1. But maybe staff, Mr. Chair, could provide us kind of an update. At the end of session when we were doing all the conference stuff, the numbers are flying around, and we've never had a swing of $726 million to the bad in your time or mine. That just caught us all by surprise, and with credit to you, I understand you based upon the best available math. But perhaps it would be useful if MMB and Mr. Berg or whoever by tomorrow could come up with a spreadsheet on the general fund impact of the medical assistant expansion, so we can all talk about the same numbers, so we'll know what we bought, and the basic health plan impact based upon the best information that we have for tomorrow, so we can have this in front of us so the members will know if you're agreeable to that.
Well, we do have some numbers, but I don't know what the cost is, but I can tell you the MA expansion is bringing, over a four-year period, bringing $5.4 billion into our healthcare system.
Right.
Of federal money.
Federal. Yeah. And Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your enthusiasm for the $5.4 billion, but it would just be nice to know what our share is, and because I know the share increases over the years, but I think it would be prudent for the members of this committee of all, as we are now overseeing an increase in our budget of $400 million above the governor, and according to our bill, the deficit in healthcare access fund come 2018 would all go out of general fund as well. And so the decisions made in this bill are going to determine, it won't be you because you're retiring, but the next chairman, actually two chairmen from now, will be having to contend with this very matter. And so I'm just, if you could direct staff to do that, that would be productive. And one,
I think Doug has most of that.
But it was compiled on one piece of paper, it would help, and then we could maybe review that. And Mr. Chair, one final question. Was there a target for the tails? I know Ways and Means didn't set one, but was there
Yes, there was. What was, Mr. Berg, what was the target?
Mr. Chair, it is not part of the budget resolution, but I was directed that this committee should keep its tails under $581.2 million.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After talking with staff, I think this is the appropriate time for me to raise just a couple issues that I will be bringing forward just kind of as a heads up. For the last several years, we've been working on non-emergency medical transportation in these committees. There is, the fiscal note has not been put together formally yet, but I think we're talking between $10 and $15 million to fund the changes that the committee has worked on over the last couple years. And there doesn't appear to be room for it at this point. But this is a legislative committee, and I guess I'm a little frustrated because it seems to me it should be in the governor and the department's requests, because it has been a legislative committee that has been working to come to resolution for a large number of years, and it's been a lot of work. And so I just want to raise that something will be coming.
Is this emergency or non-emergency?
Non-emergency medical transportation. Okay. And so, that will be coming. It's in transportation this afternoon. It's already been through Health and Human Service Policy, and the fiscal note is still coming. And because we knew of that particular committee, the work is going to require actually technology, which we're not ready to fund yet, and the department is not ready to move forward yet. There will be costs in the out years on many years out. We're pushing that a couple years on a technology piece in order for that system to work appropriately as well, but that you won't have to worry about. And then the second issue that I'd like to raise is the racial disparities grants. We had the report that came out this year. It was public. We've talked about it a lot, and we have a couple bills in here that sort of deal with those issues piecemeal, but I really wish this committee could look at it rather than just a little bill here and a little bill there, as what is the Department of Health going to do with that particular issue, and how can we give them a more robust funding mechanism and challenge to move ahead on multiple issues, not just with a little bill here, a little bit there. So there's still some unfunded requirements that this legislature passed last year that I'm going to try to address in an amendment tomorrow or Thursday, whenever you're going to do that as well, and I've mentioned it to staff. And then lastly, all of us are on edge, and this is a tough time. We always hit these times in committee where and in the session where we get on edge. And so I would like to apologize to Representative McDonald for my off-the-record comment that we had already dealt with that issue, and suggest that perhaps he could chastise me off the record next time as well. But I apologize for having said something that upset you, but as I said, we're all on edge. We all have a lot on our mind, and these are tough issues. And Mr. Chair, I know I'm going to bring you some tougher issues in the next day or two with these amendments, but I just wanted to make folks aware that they're still coming.
Okay. I think with that, we will adjourn the meeting.